May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. 101 years ago, late in a black night, unlit by lampposts on every street, the news came that the war was over and this city went almost mad with joy. Crowds gathered in the streets, parades marched all over the downtown, bonfires were lit on garbage on every street corner, bells were rung, people laughed and hugged and shook hands and wept with joy that the Great War, the war to end all wars, was over. The war that had cost so much, the war that had been so much more dramatically more terrible than anyone had ever imagined, it was finally over. And all that grief and joy and relief overflowed in delighted hatred against their enemies, the German king and the crown prince. And so here's what they did in Calgary. They paraded life-sized effigies of their enemies through the streets, and no doubt imagined that they were real prisoners of war. And I imagine how they acted, spitting on the effigies, jeering at them, slapping them, beating them, pouring out upon them all the hatred and pain and fear and grief of the past 4 years. Once they'd paraded through the city streets to City Hall, these effigies were hung on a gibbet and left there like rotting prisoners for 5 hours to be spectated and abused by increasingly drunken crowds. And the crowds were so enthusiastic that, in fact, the effigies, they had to be guarded by soldiers. How interesting would that have been for those soldiers? Now they're guarding these effigies from the local population, so that the local population wouldn't get too enthusiastic and burn them ahead of time. And then after 5 hours, they were burned for the entertainment of the screaming masses. Well, I, for one, am glad that this is no longer how we celebrate our victories in war. I'm glad that we don't each year parade an effigy of Osama bin Laden through the streets. I'm glad that tomorrow we won't make a procession, you know, ending at Village Square while we get drunk and harass these effigies. We're going to gather at Village Square and light a bonfire in the night and burn them with this violent delight. Instead, we do something entirely different. And it's important to say that that still in England, they still do this, right? Guy Fawkes Night on the 5th of November, they still parade effigies of their enemies from 350 years ago. They still make effigies and parade them through the streets, and it is a giant drunken festival. What?
Fireworks.
And they have fireworks, and then they have huge bonfires and burn the effigies at night. So just so that you know, this is like an entirely possible scenario that we might actually still do that. That we might actually still do that. And no doubt in different places in the world, they still do that. And of course, our neighbors to the south will have these huge ticker tape parades sponsored by all the department stores and flyovers from the military. Instead, we do something entirely different. We dream of a world in which war is no longer necessary, and we grieve the cost of peace. The cost paid by our servicemen and women down through the years. And it's not only the cost that has been paid in lives, but the cost that is paid on an ongoing basis, amortized over many years, the costs that are paid with their health and the costs that are paid with mental well-being and the costs that are paid by the families as these things go on and on. So instead of parading effigies through the street and getting drunk or having huge parades, we take time every year to reflect, and it's quiet and sober and humble to reflect on their service in the name of peace. And we wait with longing for the day when war will be no more. And so today, and tomorrow, on what could be a very different kind of day, we mourn. And we keep vigil with the dead, and we long for resurrection. You may know that our Civil Remembrance Day ceremonies in Canada are strongly based on Anglican funeral rites. And these services, they're filled with images of death and resurrection. The last post was the last thing played before everyone went to sleep. It was the bedtime song. It was the song that said, "All's well, go to sleep, it's fine." And then the vigil begins throughout the long night while we keep watch with our friends who have died. And so we have our minutes of silence, which represent the night vigil. And then is played the reveille, or in French it's réveil, it's to wake up, the call to awaken, the dawning of the new day, which now symbolizes to the resurrection of the dead, the dawning of the last day, when peace shall come at last, and the trumpet call will sound, and the dead shall arise and stand victorious with Christ. And in the meantime, we wait in hope and in grief, never forgetting the cost of war. Each year we hear these haunting words from John McCrae. In Flanders fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. In 1915, when Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae wrote these now famous lines, he was mourning the death of his friend just the day before. It was early in the war, just the 1 year in, and all of Europe was still fired up by the passion and the romanticism of dying for a noble cause. And both sides spoke and behaved as if God was on their side and their enemies were the servants of the devil. In the midst of all of this, McCrae felt the call to defeat his enemy and to avenge the deaths of his friends. The dead say, as the poem continues, "Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you, from failing hands, we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields." But how now do we understand what torch it is that the dead pass on to us? Every time I hear this, I wonder, do the dead really sleep uneasily when their side loses in war? I don't know. I don't know that it looks the same on the other side of death. I think that the tragedy and the bloodshed of the 20th century teaches us some new lesson. God willing, we'll maybe learn it. For, of course, everyone ended up losing the First World War. Everyone lost. There's a great article in the National Post this weekend, 50 lessons we learned from the Treaty of Versailles. And the Treaty of Versailles ended the First World War and set all of the scene for everything that came afterwards. Everyone lost. That was the 50 lessons of the Treaty of Versailles. There was not one winner. Everyone lost the First World War. First, there was the count of the dead. 9 million combatants and 6 million civilians, with over 20 million wounded. And immediately following the war, a direct relationship to the war was the Spanish influenza epidemic, which was spread directly among those who were affected and weakened by war. 50 to 100 million people, more than the war itself had killed. And then the peace treaty that was struck at Versailles utterly crippled the German economy, and it undermined all the economies of Europe. And then in 1929, the stock market crashed, and the whole global economy went down like a house of cards, leading to poverty and homelessness and starvation for millions of people around the world. And out of all of that mess rose Hitler and all of the conditions for the Second World War. And out of those wars have led the conditions for almost but not quite every major war and many of the minor ones ever since. So there was not one person who came away from the First World War triumphant. No one. Everyone lost the First World War. There was no meaningful avenging of the dead. There was no lasting peace and prosperity. There was only temporary delight at the humiliation of the losers. But there is another way, a way to which Christ calls us as Christians. It is to mourn the dead and count the cost. Not as we would see the cost, but as Christ might see it. To see the cost not only of our side, but the cost to the human family when our violent passions get so out of control that we long for violence to be done to our enemies. To see the cost, not only of the dead, but of the lives and bodies that are broken, and the marriages, and the cost to children, and the PTSD, and the alcoholism, and the addiction, and the suicide, and the generational influences that war has, the psychological ravages that war leaves behind on every side. There are no winners. And we are called to a commitment to pay the costs of war only in the greatest of need, and only to protect the very highest of ideals. And there is another commitment too that Christ calls into our hearts, that we owe to those who have died in war and those who have borne the costs. It is the commitment that we too should look around us and do everything we can to work for peace and to protect the very highest of ideals for which they died. And we can do that, and we must do that, each one of us, right here where we live. We can be salt, we can be light, we can be yeast. Just at this time last year, there was that deadly shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Here in Calgary, the Calgary Interfaith Council swiftly organized a peace vigil, Beth Zedek Synagogue. And there in a Jewish synagogue, mourning Jewish dead, some of the most moving and inspiring words were spoken by an imam whose name I didn't get. Here's what he said. For there to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nation. And for there to be peace in the nation, there must be peace in the province. And for there to be peace in the province, There must be peace in the city. And for there to be peace in the city, there must be peace in the community. And for there to be peace in the community, there must be peace in the family. And for there to be peace in the family, there must be peace in the heart. So, friends, we take now the torch, ours to carry. And we carry that torch out into the community in which we live. Let there be peace in our hearts and peace in our families so that there can be peace in our communities and peace in our city. Let that be the effort that we make and the small cost that we pay in honor of those who have paid the greatest price. I was reflecting on this service last year, and I thought, gosh, we need a lot more peace. And the cost of peace is getting a lot closer to home. I was recently seated at a dinner where, you know, there's arranged seating, and I got seated next to an elderly man who wanted to tell me how utterly useless my generation is and how it would really be a whole lot better if we suffered more like he had suffered more, and therefore that made him better and me worse. It was a really uncomfortable dinner. Oh boy. And I found myself feeling overwhelmed by worry for the future because he was born too late for the Second World War. And while his life has involved lots of anxiety and clearly a lot of suffering, the future for the younger generations most likely looks like will involve war again. It looks like that's what we're looking at. And I don't know what you guys feel when you look at the United States of America, but I think, and historians think, there's something like an 80% chance that there will be a civil war, another civil war. We don't know what the future will bring, and we don't know the tensions that it is going to pull on us, and it is going to pull on our families, it is going to pull on our communities, it is going to pull on the fabric of a diverse congregation like this one. It's going to pull all those fault lines apart. For there to be peace in the world, we have to be very dedicated and focused and willing to pay at least some small cost of working for peace in our communities. Today, we, thank God, do not celebrate our triumphs and glory in our enemies' downfall. We commemorate the dead, and we honor those who keep this country safe, and we honor those who have worked for the cause of peace around the world. May God bless them. May God bless each one of us with a spirit of peace. And for as long as we can, may God bless us with the peace we now enjoy. Amen.